You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, Local News and Alternative Views, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Did you get that? Okay, and why is it new? Because it's not the same as last week. So if you want to catch up on that, of course, sure, go to our website, whfr.fm, click on Talk Shows, click on WHFR Journal, and then select the date. Like last Friday was the 16th, and today is the 23rd of March. I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR News Director extraordinaire and reporter from the Dearborn Press and Guide, Dennis Reimars. Say hello, Dennis.
Hello. How are you?
Oh. Okay, we're not there.
That's okay. This is our hello test.
It was. The odds were 1 in 3 that the correct microphone would be on.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. And I try to move.
That's not, those aren't good odds.
It's like a shell game over here. I try to three-card Monty.
That's right. Well, it's a very busy day here at Henry Ford Community College campus. We've got two major events in progress right now. The fourth annual Religion, Conflict, and Peace conference is just beginning, and that's in our Administrative Services and Conference Center, just south of the Student Center where WHFR is, and in this building. Whoa, our usual Women's Recognition Luncheon.
29th annual.
Yeah, wow. And so it looks like it might continue next year, too.
Well, you have to make an even number if you're going to stop.
After a tradition like that.
Sure.
And there's still women around, right, Dennis?
I've heard that. Working for the paper, I have that news. Yeah.
That's right. So just being a little satirically sexist here, folks, just for a second. But it's always a wonderful event. They always recognize people from the community as well as significant women who have contributed to what's going on here at Henry Ford Community College. And so it's a very big affair, very classy. I didn't quite dress for it, but I didn't get invited. But they do allow men, Dennis. So I know Susan McGraw, our general manager, is probably over there, unless she's in a hiring committee. It's very busy on this campus this week. And we do want to talk about the Holistic Fair coming up tomorrow here at Henry Ford Community College, because it's a WHFR benefit event, but a lot of fun, a lot of excitement in that, and we'll do that a little bit later. And next week, Friday, I'll mention this at the end of the show too, but it's our Henry Ford Community College Alternative Energy Summit, the fourth year for that event, which is free. It's from 8 in the morning, or I just saw a sign at 8:30, probably something official starting at 8:30, but 8 o'clock is like you could register and maybe get some free goodies of some sort or another. I'm not sure about the food stuff there, folks, but it's free, and anybody interested in the new energy sources of the future and local applications, how to save energy right in your own neighborhood with your own house. That's fantastic. A couple of seminars are going to be there too, and that's also at our Administrative Services and Conference Center. Again, just immediately south. It says Mazzara building on the front of it.
That's right.
On Evergreen Road here, just south of our main campus in Dearborn. So if you can put that on your calendars, I know I'm going to be over there for most of the hours in the morning. I don't know if anyone wants to take a free test drive in my alternative energy automobile. No, they don't. It's a diesel.
Are you offering?
Sakes. No.
Because I don't
Nobody
take
asked
you up
me,
on that.
But you've already ridden with me, Dennis.
Oh, I want to tell everyone, and this is a perfect opportunity. Jay Kornick is one of the best drivers I have ever met. I'm not kidding. He talks about things, and he likes a car that is high performance because he feels that in dangerous situations, like you said, if you know how to drive, it can help you.
It's a safety margin.
It's a safety margin.
Right. And we better brakes and more certain acceleration.
But you have to know what you're doing. I think you'll agree with that. You do, and we went to Lansing a week ago. Of course, a couple members of our staff got some accolades, and I drove with you specifically because I love your vehicle and I love your driving. There you go.
Well, thank you. But diesels are definitely a good choice. Sure, I have a diesel in a large SUV, But on the way up and back to Lansing, we got over 30 miles to a gallon.
Incredible.
So, and that was a little bit above the speed limit of 70. But so everybody does that on 96, though, if it's clear, if it's not a lot of traffic. And the smaller diesels, in the especially in the Volkswagen line of cars, that's getting 42 to 45 miles to gallon right now. And they're clean diesels. They're not like the old dirty ones. So, but there's going to be a lot of great sessions. I will say that for today's show, and that's next week Friday here on the 30th of March at Henry Ford Community College main campus, the Energy Summit. And it's free to everyone. Just come 8:30 and all the way to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Also, next Friday, our special guest is Judge Mark Summers. That he's currently in the 19th District Court, but of course he's changing levels of judicial expertise. Now he's going to try to run for a district court,
circuit court. Yes,
is that federal or state? Circuit court.
Still state.
State. Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, yes, he's had some unfortunate legal decisions against him and or against, depending how you look at it, the city of Dearborn and their and the way that they managed that court. I think there's still some question about who has to pay the rulings or how many appeals are still possible.
Sure.
And we'll get that from him.
Well,
I
talked to him, and you know, I'm sure he'll expand on this, but I think he said he's 53 years old, and he and his wife looked at it, and they said, this is a great opportunity right now to do this. And he says the worst case scenario is I still have my job. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll talk to him at length.
Right.
And we've seen him a lot on campus.
Now, promoted today on our website, as we did for last week, Dave Norwood, Dearborn Sustainability Coordinator, is supposed to be here on the show. He put it down in his book, but again, there's probably some important issue or meeting that he's been in that carried over.
It just could be crazy out there.
And on campus, yeah, there's almost no close available parking to the front of the campus because of all these events going on. So we're hoping he gets here. We didn't promise him the whole show anyway. So
right. We're
hoping he gets here by about halfway through or so, and we can get him on. If you're listening, Dave, and you're driving furiously, just take your time. We'd like to have you get here by 1:30 at least, if at all possible. Okay, looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide, Dennis's favorite paper.
Yeah.
Well. He just because he works for them as the Dearborn Heights reporter now.
Well, actually, yeah, I am freelance, so let's make
yes.
it clear.
Well, adjunct or part-time.
Sure.
Or, yeah.
Having
he
so
would
much
like
fun.
To get a full-time job someday somewhere, but, you know.
You would think, but.
I told him that the current editor, Tim Powers, started this way, and look at where he is today.
Yeah. Great guy, too.
Yeah.
Really nice guy.
At least
guy.
He's got a full-time job, anyway.
Yeah.
And we could have mentioned it last week because it was on patch.com, but City Council has approved the sale of Dearborn Towers in Florida. This was in last Sunday's Press and Guide from the 18th, and $6.25 million is what's over and done with now, okay? And it took since 2007 ballot question about whether or not it should be sold or could be sold by the city. Since then, they've been trying to get it approved and investigated whether or not there's asbestos or what is the real value. And, of course, the bottom fell out of the property values everywhere, including Florida, since 2008. So maybe it was a little less than they hoped for, but the cost of some renovations to it would have cost the city more in the long run. And I think that vote in 2007 sort of indicated the sentiment of a lot of people in Dearborn. Why are we doing this? If it's not bringing in a lot of money, it seems an awful long way away. And a few of the residents, they did ask, and I think it was on Patch.com this week, maybe you saw it, Dennis, what are you going to do now? They had a reporter down there from Patch.com who interviewed some of the tower residents. I thought that was a cool thing to do.
Very
because
cool.
Patch.com is actually all over the country, folks, and they have reporters there, so they probably put a call in to their office that's nearest to wherever Clearwater, Florida is.
It's probably a Clearwater patch, I would imagine. It's a big
perhaps,
city.
Perhaps, yeah. And so most of the residents said, the ones they talked to said they were only paying $800 a month. And I don't know if that's one bedroom or two bedroom,
right,
but
that's
a
true.
Condo on the waterfront front with their own dock onto the Gulf of Mexico.
Sounds a little low, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it was sort of like guaranteed once they made a deal with the city or something. But that's a great deal. But they're concerned that the new owners won't let them stay. They're going to redevelop them and make them upscale more, and that they won't be able to continue. So they have a question of where they're going to stay.
Right.
All of the people they talked to were only there 6 months.
What do you mean?
So they have the option. Yeah. They go down in Michigan winters, and they come back in Michigan summer. So mm-hmm. they must have two houses. So I would say if that's the case, they probably have some extra monies available to look for another place down there.
Well, maybe $800 a month is the reason why they have extra money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a great deal.
But I'm sure some are in worse conditions than that. I'm not criticizing the people that are down there. That's always been a question of, and I know there was a proposal from the owners of those condos to maybe buy the building for themselves
and try
to get a management company to help them run it, but that didn't go ahead. It was some other. So they're looking for play. But, you know, that we got $6.25 million. They were sort of counting on it in this year's budget, and so it's not extra money, folks, but that's looks like over and done with. Also in a pressing guide from last Sunday, Dearborn Schools are going to offer a kids' nutrition program, although they didn't really take much initiative in this, folks. They got a proposal at the school board from a company called My Nutritech, and they're going to be that program is on the internet, and they'll be linked to a website at the Dearborn School website. And they're not paying for the program. It's free. Now, Oakwood Medical Center in the city approached the district about participating. And the food service director of K-12 will serve as the liaison. And I just wanted to say, folks, is that my own personal doctor who is in Royal Oak, his name is Dr. Paul Ehrman. It's not a plug for him, but he is well known as a children's health and nutrition expert nationally. In fact, he's going to Washington, D.C. next week to the Capitol to meet with senators and representatives about some initiatives. And he has done a tremendous job of working, as I say, in the legal profession, pro bono, that is for free, with the Royal Oak School District to set up programs that educate the parents as well as the children and changes the school district, too. There's been a big to-do, you know, this last week about pink slime. Pink slime is food products, beef, but not, you know, it's trimmings, meat trimmings, and they're processed and they're squeezed together, and they add ammonium to them to kill all the bacteria.
That's thoughtful.
And it's 70 or 80% of most of the beef that most of the school systems in the U.S. use for their lunches. And the only fast food chain that we know of, that I know of right now, that has said, okay, we won't use pink slime, is McDonald's.
Yeah, but that's recent.
And that's relatively recent. Yeah. But it's, and of course, there's other people that, well, pink slime is not really that bad for you, just a bad-sounding name that somebody came up with.
Right, right.
I mean, there's no bacteria because we killed it all.
Yeah.
But it's just the thought of it being less than real meat. Actually, the thought of real meat to me now being, I'd say, 95% vegetarian is kind of turns my stomach anyway.
Right.
And, of course, I got into vegetarianism because I actually saw documentaries about how our meat is processed and, you know, the living animals being killed. Yes, that's the way it happens, folks. Our ancestors lived this way for a couple of million years. They had to kill animals in order to stay alive. And we are carnivores or multivores. We can eat vegetables if we wanted to.
Omnivores?
Mm-hmm. Multivores. Omnivores, okay. You know, when I see those animals, I have too much compassion.
Yes, you do.
Which is silly. I mean, if I was starving to death, I could overcome that compassion.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, if you got a choice, it actually saves on, to be a vegetarian, a lot of natural resources.
That's what they say. They say the single biggest thing you can do is be a vegetarian to save on the natural resources.
And let's see if I brought it in with me. Yesterday is World Water Day.
Yesterday was?
Yes, it was.
Oh, I missed
it. And so we missed the celebration. But on average, the water footprint of American is 32,911 glasses of water a day.
Wow.
Now, that's because of all the water that goes into, not just drinking it, that's only about 8 glasses a day,
sure,
maybe, or 6 for some people, or less. But all the water it takes to process different things. I think a hamburger takes 45 tons of water because you got to give water to the cows.
Oh, sure. You're talking about from the very beginning.
Yeah, right from the beginning. Yeah. The total amount of water needed to keep us alive per day. And it's not necessarily in our homes, but in terms of all the stuff we use. Well, there'd be a lot less water consumed and more water for everybody, more clean water for everybody if we were vegetarians.
Think of all the water those plants drink. you know?
Not as much as the animals.
And then on top of that, can you imagine killing those plants? I mean, you're still murdering. No, I'm joking, but some people have brought up that argument. I thought it was a little bit ludicrous.
Well, whenever a living, something that's alive is killed, is forcibly killed, there's even some experts that say that plants give off some sort of scream or vibrations.
Yeah.
No living thing in the process of life likes to have that cut short. You know, it hurts somehow. I mean, we don't know what that means to a plant or lower animals, the ones that are shorter than us. But you know, that is the chain of existence, is that the big eat the little or consume the little one way or the other, and humans have to do that. There's no way that we can avoid that. But anyway, I'm looking at the email here from the Nature Conservancy that I'm a member of nationally, and they're primarily known for buying land that's owned by private citizens and doing nothing with it. In other words, they're trying, because they don't believe can trust governments with their state parks and their national parks to really preserve the land in its pristine state. They're always going to try to turn it into some sort of recreational area or sell the mining rights or whatever, or build more roads into it. And that actually destroys the wilderness and the habitats for many animals. And also it you know, keeps our air clean too, to have more forest and so on. When you give money to them, they save it up and they buy either land that's contiguous to preserves they already have, or they start new developments, and people have actually even donated their land from their summer homes or something in a wilderness area for that. But they're also one of the big ecology groups in the U.S. and clean water, clean air. If Dave Norwood makes it here today, we'll talk to him about that too. So put that on the pile of questions for Dave. I just wanted to say that my Nutritech, I'm using a program that my doctor suggested to me. And there's many apps. Yeah. If you got an iPod Touch or you got an iPhone or even on Android, look for apps that are like diet trackers or calorie counters. Those would be the key words. And the one that's the biggest and the most recommended is the one my doctor suggested to me, called MyFitnessPal. And it's at MyFitnessPal.com. You can even download it for your desktop computer. No cost. It's free. Sort of like My Nutritech. Okay. Now, I think My Nutritech is set up for kids. And it's got entertaining, informative things that may be a little simpler to use for children at various ages.
Sure.
But in fact, this works great. MyFitnessPal, I've lost, I know it doesn't sound like much, 8 pounds in the last 8 weeks.
That's great.
And that's because I finally know actively, and it only takes me seconds after each meal or at the end of the day to put these things in my iPod Touch and or on my desktop computer and get a total. And it shows me what different foods, how high in calories they are. Of course, you should eat good calories, the healthy fruit, vegetables, and maybe try to decrease the amount of meat and so on. But it is tremendous assistance. I'm down from, I couldn't believe it, I was stuffing my face and gaining pounds for the last couple of years with 2,000 to 3,000 calories a day. And especially when you get older, your metabolism is not so much. Dennis, you're still young and active, but you know, it slows down as you get older, so you don't need as much food, but you should consider eating good food. And I was eating a lot of healthy food, but I was eating too large a portion. You don't really, just give me more of those fresh veggies and I have 4 or 5 fruits. And, well, it's too many calories. Yeah. I mean, it's not many per serving, but it's too many. So this is great. And by the way, on a diet, you shouldn't try to do crash diets, folks. Just warning you, and of course, consult your doctor before we go on any diet. Can't sue us for our opinion here now. As we said, go see your doctor. But crash diets generally don't work. You gain it back. You feel bad. If you're not supplementing with multivitamins or whatever, you might get sick. Definitely. But if you can get down to something, use something like mine. I even looked at My Nutritech. That's NutraTech. My Nutritech. Probably MyNutraTech.com if you want to check it out. In Dearborn, they're going to be setting up a program to have the kids sort of regulate themselves. See if that works. See if they can turn down that fast food. See if once they know, and MyFitnessPal.com actually, they give you a complete breakdown of fats and sugars and protein in every one of these items that you're eating, too, if you want to take a look at that. And so over a couple of weeks to a couple of months, if you stick with it, you really will start to be eating more healthy and lose weight. And because these programs are so well designed and so intuitive, they only take a few extra seconds. And if people spend half their day tweeting and using other stupid apps, they certainly can add this one or something like it that they prefer to their schedule. And I think it's a great idea. Unfortunately, it wasn't started by the school system, but I'm glad that somebody brought it up.
Sure, and they might have used it as a model.
Because I think it works. Well, think it's really worked for me.
And the way you're doing it makes so much sense. I had to leave the studio for a second, but you, the way you're doing it, I think you said,
gradually,
don't crash jail.
Yes, right.
And you, the percentage of chances that you'll keep it off are so much greater.
Right. If you know what you're doing, a pound a week until you get down to a certain healthy level, and my doctor thought, well, he thought I should lose about 20 pounds overall. That would be 10% of my weight in January. But I haven't weighed that much totally since I think I was 26. So that's 40 years back.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's possible, but I'm feeling good.
You know how they do that? At this height, you should be this weight. I am the perfect weight if I was 7.5 feet tall.
There you go. All right.
So I just have to,
just got
to
grow a little
bit.
That
helps me sleep at night, sure.
Get some growth hormones. also, on last Sunday's Press and Guide, judicial candidates working campaign trail early. I got a report that Candace Abbott is still getting signatures on a petition so she can get her name on the ballot. I thought she was already, but probably still need, I don't know what the deadline is, but Richard Wagonik is campaigning, setting up his first fundraiser coming up soon. And, of course, Sam Salome. Either way, there's interesting kind of, Salome was that temptress in some sort of mythology
that I remember that
brought men to their death. But anyway, or she a spy or something? Anyway, he's got the endorsement, we know, from a couple weeks ago of Mayor O'Reilly.
Sure.
Interestingly. And he has been, it says he was a former 19th District Court magistrate. And magistrates handle, apparently, issues of lesser importance.
They can do weddings, right?
I'm not sure. I know that one of our WHFR staff members is going in front of a magistrate over a parking ticket.
Interesting.
That they were given to plead their case this week and didn't recognize the name of the magistrate. And so Salome is not currently a magistrate.
Is that an old term? That goes way back, doesn't it?
It's used currently. I mean, we have magistrate, at least one, in the 19th District Court here.
Okay.
And, of course, we'll be talking to Mark Summers, who's already started his campaign for the district position.
Circuit. And actually, the signature gathering stage the last time we spoke, which was a couple weeks ago. So they were going for well over the number that they needed to get on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Yeah. At our WHFR meeting, we had a cousin of Mark Summers getting signatures for him.
Okay. They need a minimum of 4,000, I want to say, but he was shooting for between 6,000 and 7,000. Yeah. Of course, you have to make sure that sometimes it turns out somebody that signed is not actually a registered voter, and you can't use it.
You've got
it,
more than signatures than required. Yeah. Police discussing party problems with Monsignor Hunt of the KOC. Dennis, just a brief report on Dearborn Heights City Council.
That was actually 10 days ago, and that's, in fact, as we
old news
go through the business, they approve most of the things that are put in front of them, and of course, they have all the information, and I'm privy to that as well. And, sometimes there will be a modification or an amendment to a particular thing, and then it's approved. But the real big news is this past Tuesday evening, we had just a couple days ago, we had a special study session, as they're called, in the chambers of Dearborn Heights City Council, and it was to discuss. Are you familiar with the smart meters, Jay? DTE Energy.
Tell our listeners.
Pardon me?
Tell our listeners what they are.
The smart meters are, in fact, they're going to be used, and they're hoping to replace the existing electric meters that we have in our houses. And they look very similar. There's actually a blue plate on it, so you can tell the difference. And it is a big difference between the smart meter and one that is purely digital. Mm-hmm. The smart meter basically allows DTE to capture your together your usage information from your gas and electric remotely. So basically, theoretically, they can drive down the middle of your block, and everyone in the neighborhood would have smart meters, and they will gather the information without having to actually enter your backyard and read your meter.
Yep.
The reason why there was a special study session is there's a lot of people, and not just from Dearborn Heights or Dearborn, residents from all over that are going to the city county, the city council mm-hmm. meetings, and saying that these particular devices, these smart meters, there's a cumulative effect of radiation when combined with the other sources in your house, like, you know, your microwave, your cell phone, what have you. They mm-hmm. say there's privacy issues because even though the information is encrypted, you're getting the remote gathering of this information is leaving you vulnerable to privacy issues, and as well as some people even said there's fire concerns.
Yeah, local issues can be rather complicated, and there's many points of view, you know, whether or not they ultimately will affect major changes in your life or another question.
Well, they can't. The council doesn't have the ability to do much more than suggest that this was looked into, and it is being. But I just want to comment that when I first brought this up to you, Jay, you said something really interesting. You said that at that level, at the city government level, so much change can actually be made.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the key ways to do it, as opposed to holding signs or sitting in or whatever, is to, at the end of the meeting, go up when it's an open forum for the public and state your case. And if you do this enough times, and this is exactly what happened in this particular case, they kept coming back each week to the council meetings, and then finally they have a special study session where DTE representatives were actually there.
Probably a negative metaphor, but the squeaky wheel gets the
grease. You are exactly right, but you have to do it appropriately. Appropriately,
yes, of course. And follow the system, but you just
wear them out.
let them know what the issue is, and eventually, and of course, you try to meet their. If the council expresses a reason why things aren't changing or whatever, or they don't want to take action, then you try to listen to them and respond to where they're coming from, too, and find an answer to continue action in the direction you want it. So it's a give and take, but that's democracy, and certainly local government is the place to start.
Absolutely.
I just heard Mayor Pletko on WDET, Greg Folley Show, this morning. He was making a comment about everything is fine in Dearborn Heights. We're doing fine.
Do you remember there
was some event that's going on or something?
Well, they had to show a budget deficit reduction plan.
Right.
I mean, or they were facing some pretty serious stuff, and they did it. So yeah, at one of the meetings, and I'll say it exactly like Mayor Pletko said. He says, "I do not want the media even getting a sniff of the word bankruptcy because we are not even close." And I thought he went out of his way to say that. So good for him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dearborn Times Herald, switching to them, their edition is either dated for the whole week or Wednesday, March 21st, on the front page at least. We know that the Goodwill proposal was stalled once more.
Yeah, yet again until
because
April 9th.
Because they didn't have enough commissioners, so the Goodwill people themselves said, because we just wait another month, because nothing's going to happen, we know, this month.
Right.
And whether or not they can wait it out will be anybody's guess. It's interesting that Syed Deep, who wrote the editorial being against that location for Goodwill, so he would obviously vote no, that he didn't show up at this meeting this last time.
3 out of 5, it says.
And I can understand that in a way, if you didn't want to be criticized for being negative and you wanted to let the good people get their vote, it seems to me that their quorum is pretty high. What do they need? 6 out of 9, I guess?
No, five affirmative
five
votes
out of 9.
Are needed.
And right.
And 3 of 5.
But you need a quorum,
too,
in order to take a vote. And I'm not, I think a quorum is 6 or something. But, of course, then it can't be a tie.
Right.
So I think his maybe, I'm just saying, I know things come up. These are volunteers, folks, and he just couldn't be there. But not being there might have given the advantage to letting it go through, and he didn't have to go on record as voting against it.
Right.
But 3 people didn't show up. They couldn't even take a vote. Okay. Let's see what else is going on in the Times Herald here. A couple things about Wyandotte. We don't usually talk about that, but good for the Times Herald that they have probably freelancers, freelance reporters that cover either Wyandotte, Lincoln Park, and so on. And Wyandotte says free-roaming shelter opens in Wyandotte. That's animal shelter, folks. And this is a great idea. This is what the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter would like to have as a new facility. This is not a city facility, this new free-roaming shelter, but it is run by a nonprofit called Shelter to Home Incorporated, a Southeast Michigan-based pet rescue group. Will mark its fifth anniversary Saturday with the grand opening of its new free-roaming adoption facility at 266 Oak. The facility is one of the first of its kind in the area. And so they say everyone hates to go into the pound. Most of them are a scary place, dingy, dirty. The animals look so sad. And, you know, that's not the case with the Dearborn Animal Shelter, but nonetheless, they're still in cages, and the animals do look sad. So they've renovated this house. It was built originally in 1874 and formerly was used as a chiropractor's office. And took months of work by the volunteer staff. Well, good for them. Mm-hmm. And what it is they converted the graffiti-covered interior, must have been bad shape, into a five-bedroom house where cats rescued from euthanizing shelters, which is not the Dearborn Animal Shelter, can freely roam the five rooms and lounge on cozy beds and chairs.
I want to go in the Zen room.
Yeah, also they have a Zen room. And we'll send Dennis there quick. Decorated with Buddha sculptures and overstuffed cat beds.
And I understand that cats just love Buddha sculptures. That's what I've read.
And they know what a good pillow is.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah. So, and they can only hold 25 cats, but a 90-member group, it's only cats, but they're really an adjunct to, you know, there's been problems, and I don't know the update with the problems of the Wyandotte Animal Shelter, but there's some health violations and some unsatisfactory conditions, and I'm not sure what the city has done with that, if anything. But the city has moved ahead. The other story here on the same page in the Times-Herald, they're getting close to the city's longtime goal of a transient marina in Bishop Park. Does that mean illegal immigrants are going to be coming in by boat?
Or they're just going to keep
Canada?
Moving it. It'll be transient. Yeah.
Transient means that people who don't live there in Bishop Park or in Trenton, it's not a marina where you can dock your boat all year long. But it just means you want to stop there. You know, if you're out on the river in a boat or something, you want to stop there to visit for a while and then leave, you can do that. And
well, Bishop Park there, that's right. There's a pier there as well, isn't there, that goes out into the water?
I know where the entrance. I haven't been in Bishop Park for quite a while, but there's it's like a single entrance off of, is it Jefferson?
Well, Biddle in my
Biddle,
day, yeah.
Right.
But
Biddle,
it is. It's a single entrance, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes right down to the water.
So they have gotten a grant. The city council has voted to approve two grant applications. They're trying for grants anyway, to the Waterways Planning Unit of the State Department of Natural Resources. So that's our state of Michigan. Who says the DNR doesn't do something good? And they're trying to get $2 million. Well, the first grant would be for $2.3 million, with matching funds of $1.17 million from the city's Tax Increment Financing Authority. That's, I think, businesses pay into that, and they save it up for a special project.
Well, Wyandotte's a unique community. Isn't it very self-contained? Don't they have, like, their own power and their own cable?
Well, this would help business if more people, when they're out on their boats, had a place or destination to go. And be able to dock rather than just docking at a single, like, restaurant. I mean, restaurants in Trenton and other places, they have a boat dock, but then they expect you to eat there.
It's kind of the deal, yeah.
Yeah, you can't just park and walk somewhere
else,
probably.
Yeah.
Although maybe some people do. So that's nice. Wyandotte has always been doing some unique things. They've got some ways to go with their animal shelter, but good for that volunteer group.
Yep.
Volunteers should get all the support they can. We're moving right on through the news here. Remember, you can hear the pages turning in most cases on the air, and no other radio show has that going. We're at the Pressing Guide from this last Wednesday, which has a separate section called What's Next? It seems there should be a joke there, but...
we'll think of one next week.
Some Saturday Night Live routine. What's Up Now or something. There's a comedy routine that's based on they have a song about it. Anyway, I thought that was the purpose of the whole paper. What's next?
Yeah.
What's happening right now? J. Patrick Pepper on the front page wrote this summary of what we already knew, but it's always good to know about it. Again, in case you didn't hear about it before, is that the redistricting for the state house, that's the state of Michigan here, the House of Representatives, for Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, luckily, it's pretty much the same as it was. There's not much change. So Dearborn is still the 15th district, and it is, of course, George Durrani is representing us. And if you missed last week's show, we had him. He didn't expect it. Oh, boy, but I had the questions. A whole hour a whole hour of the WHFR Journal last week. That's March 16th. Go to our website, WHFR.fm. Listen to it. He went into great amounts of detail about what's happening and what he thought about different issues. And I do thank him for staying the whole hour, since I couldn't stop talking and asking more questions.
You did get on a roll, I have to admit.
But, and it's not promoted in the paper, it's not tied in, but the League of Women Voters of Michigan, of Dearborn Heights specifically, but LWVMI is the state website for League Women Voters, MIMichigan.com. They're going to have a seminar this coming session, discussion with State Senator Morris Hood III.
Okay.
Very distinguished, articulate guy that I saw at the tax forum for the first time a couple weeks ago.
He was also at the mayor's State of the City.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you have to be if you represent this area.
Right.
Most of his district is a little bit of Detroit, but it's mostly the Dearborn areas. So obviously he has to be around here too. Good suits. I've said that about him.
I have to agree.
Wow,
after
really
seeing him in person.
Expensive suits. But anyway, but he's articulate and concerned, and he's going to be there from 1 o'clock where the Christ Episcopal Church on Military Street in Dearborn. That's near Michigan Avenue, not too far north of Michigan Avenue. 120 North Michigan Military Street. Christ Episcopal Church, room 213, but I'm sure they'll have a sign if you just get to Christ Episcopal Church. 1 o'clock to 2:30. And the question is not, like, what is your district, but is there a better way to do it? You know, this gerrymandering can really hurt. This year it hasn't hurt us so much in Dearborn Heights, so that our area is part of an area 200 miles away that has to be represented by the same person, which has a lot of different points of view in it. Like John Dingo got stuck, although it's better this year for him, for the last 2 years or 4 years. He got stuck with a district that runs all the way down practically to Toledo and all the way out to Ann Arbor, but it's not the whole big area. It's a little pencil-thin area.
Right.
And that's crazy, but it's because the party in power, political party in power, happens to look at the voter registrations or the voting trends, and they figure out where the Republicans are in a majority, and they try to make all the districts Republican majority then. That way, the next election, they'll get to go more Republican. Okay. So
that sounds manipulative. And
a better way to do it, several ways have been researched and organized by Jocelyn Benson, who we may get a chance to mention before the end of this hour. She was on our show last December. She ran for Secretary of State in the last election. She didn't win, but she got more votes than any other Democratic candidate. I remember that was when Governor Snyder was elected.
Yes.
Virge Bonaro was a Democratic candidate, but she got more votes for Secretary of State than Bonaro got for governor.
She
didn't win.
I know you're going to talk about it later, but as we've noticed, she may make a run at governor. So
People keep saying that, and she doesn't say it directly.
No, she does not.
It's a way to criticize them. Oh, you just want to get elected to some big-time office.
That's true. But
if you can do the job and if people want you. But I'm just saying she was quite successful, even though lost in her first attempt to get elected. And she's been working with nonprofit organizations to improve the election process and fairness in campaign financing. But I'm not saying she's going to be at this meeting, but I'm just saying that she has already been working with a group that has an agenda for a better way to do districting, cutting the guidelines, not just for political purposes, but to better represent the nature of contiguous areas. That is, you know, if you live in Dearborn, you have certain interests that people who 30 miles downriver, it's not going to be the same.
And my question to you, and this may sound like a naive one, and I apologize, and I know that they just redistrict because of the census, and they have to do that
every 10 years.
Every 10 years. Are there times between those 10 years that it's done? No.
No.
Okay, never. So what you're saying is they look at it this way. There may be, I don't know, kind of it sounds like opportunists that are using this to political advantage.
Always. And there's no doubt that the Democrats did district guidelines or district lines in a way that could advantage them when they were in power.
Okay.
But this means that for the next 10 years, clearly across the whole U.S., both in states and in the federal districts, Republicans will have much more of an advantage than they did in the past. Now, every district has to have pretty much the same number of people in it, but it's a question of what do you know about those people,
right?
In terms of party affiliations or voting patterns,
sure,
and whatever. And I've read some of the proposals from Jocelyn Benson's group, and maybe they'll be commented on by State Senator Morris Hood, who's a Democrat and probably is aware of these ideas. It's a big, long issue, along with many other issues about fairness in voting and campaign financing that need to be. But I thought this is great, although I just found out about it by an email, and there's nothing in the papers about this coming up. So if you're interested in redistricting at all, and it's at the core of fairness in a democracy, one of those core issues, then it's Monday, this Monday, right here in Dearborn, West Dearborn, Christ Episcopal Church, Military Street north of Michigan, and the time is 1 o'clock to 2:30. Again, Monday, March 26th, and State Senator Morris Hood III will be there, along with, of course, the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights.
Is that him?
Yep.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So, high school graduation rates. I still can't believe this, but it was on the cover of the Press and Guide that the four-year graduation rate and the dropout rate were both slightly higher for Dearborn Public Schools than across the state. The state average is 74% that graduate in 4 years. Now, slightly higher percent graduate in 5 years. They need a little extra help over the summer or extra class or two. They're pretty close, but still pretty bad. One in four don't graduate, and that's a state average. Now, it's much, much worse in Detroit. It's pathetically worse. I think it's half, 40%, 60%. I mean, it's much worse in Detroit. And so Crestwood High School, congratulations, 85% graduation rate in 4 years at Crestwood High School. But obviously districts that have children at risk, without as much parental support or economic support, obviously are not going to, you know, even transportation issues come into the fact, and crime rates, why dropout rates are worse in lower income areas of the state. But that's terrible. That is awful. I went to high school a long time ago, 40 years ago, in Wayne County, and it was a small, pretty rural community. But we only had a graduation class, a senior class of 110 people. Well, 108 of them graduated. Some just barely graduated, but I mean, they got the C's and they graduated. And so, boy, oh boy, how can today, in today's world, demanding, I mean, there's plenty of jobs out there, but you got to have the training and the education. How you're just killing your whole future if you don't graduate from high school. So if you know people that are having problems staying in high school, help them, make suggestions, tough love, whatever it takes, you know, don't threaten them. I'm just saying, help them out if you can. Nothing more important than getting not just a basic education, but a college education as much as possible, maybe a vocational program on top of high school or whatever they're qualified or interested in, but as much education and training as possible, or I'm just, it seems like they're doomed.
Jay.
They're doomed to a limitation.
Yes.
Dennis wants to talk on the mic again.
I just wanted to say, I'm sorry, that threatening works.
Okay.
Yeah, my daughter's, she works with the station, and she can attest to, and they have to be, you have to back up the threats. That's all I got to say.
Uh-oh.
We have company.
Yes.
We do.
Yeah, welcome to our special guest. Sorry, Dave, if there is miscommunication. Communication is difficult at best here, but we scheduled you a couple weeks ago, and you had a conflict, an issue then, and I know it was in your mind because you're going to be a presenter at next week's Energy Summit right here at HFCC on March 30th, right?
That's correct. I'm looking forward to it.
This is Dave Norwood, who is Dearborn Sustainability Coordinator. And you've been here on the show before, and thank you for coming back. So it was in his head, well, maybe he could do two for one on the same day. And, actually, I got the date of the Energy Summit wrong, wrote it down as today, too. So I can understand how you might think we would have switched, both events were to the 30th.
But we're on a little summit here right now.
Yeah,
yes,
here you are.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you.
But talking about this.
Tell us, number one, for those people that didn't know we had a sustainability coordinator, and not every city does, I suspect, although it's a topic that maybe every city is trying to consider, how'd this come about? You're the first sustainability coordinator, actually, first person in that job, right?
That's correct. In the city, I am. This position actually started because of some actions that were done by Congress. So in 2009, to create the stimulus fund, and the city received a significant amount of money to create the sustainability office and the things that I do and the grants that I manage for the city.
And that's key, isn't it? Because a big part, if not your, I don't know if it's most of your budget, or at one point I think it was all of your budget, was in existence because of the grants that you wrote.
That's correct. Yeah, I have no budget. Right. I started the office with zero and had to write for several grants to get the projects done that I'm working on and the city is championing to make happen here in Dearborn.
I made a facetious comment last week, but maybe to the point. Wouldn't it be great if every elected official, everybody working for government at every level, could run their office with no budget? I mean, they get money from elsewhere. I mean, but there's only so many grants. And right now, luckily, there are a lot of foundations and governments at various levels and that are seeing the need to change our future to one that is sustainable, that we can continue with. Save energy, be more efficient. I mean, that should have been the mantras, you know, from the beginning of time, but it, you know, now we're in a situation where resources are quite limited, and we don't want to be dependent on foreign oil, and why waste anything if you don't have to?
That's correct. We were always, our society, certainly in southeastern Michigan, was energy was cheap. We can continue to build. We had the automotive companies were providing lots of tax dollars to communities to build and do whatever. Whatever, provide any programs they can, and we probably at that time should have been thinking a little bit more long term to come up with more sustainable.
It's tough. A lot of great things can happen, but often it takes a near crisis or a crisis, unfortunately, to get us moving. Tell us what's been happening in about the last year. I think maybe it was 6 months ago we last talked here, but what are your current projects and initiatives? Give us a little couple minutes summary,
sure.
If you like.
Yeah, we're working on, we just finished up a waste to energy feasibility study. See if we can use the waste streams that are in Dearborn to create power or natural gas for our industrial sector. That looks promising. We have to do a little more study on that to look at, to actually now start getting fine-tuning our waste streams, see what energy we can provide.
What is a waste stream?
Oh, a waste stream. The original project started with looking at the sewage waste that the city generates, and you can use that sewage waste to create power.
Doesn't that go, doesn't the city of Detroit handle
our
sewage?
Yeah, current the system is that everything goes to Detroit Water and Sewer Department, the big plant on Jefferson in Detroit. But most of our waste actually passes out of the city through some pretty large pipes near the Severstal Steel Mill and the F-150, the assembly plant, the Heritage Project. So that's where we're looking about potentially building this project.
Was that the the project that I'm tying things together. You were talking about an island of some kind.
Oh, there's Fortson Island. That's a little different project.
Yeah, okay. Gosh, there were so many. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, let me stay on the sewage thing.
Yeah, please.
if less sewage goes through those big pipes back to Detroit, then will they charge us less?
Well, our actual
first
goal
of
is,
all, I mean, we might use it to produce energy ourselves.
Charge us nothing. The idea is we will get out of that system for our waste, our deal with our sewage.
Oh, wow, wow.
That's cool. Very fascinating, interesting to the mayor.
And I think this probably has something to do with, isn't, biodegradable waste, organic waste, isn't that methane gas that comes from?
Is that
one
correct.
Of the things that they could burn to create power to move turbines and generate electricity? Is that sort of the basic principle?
You are correct, Jay. That's exactly
what it is. Wow. I just guessed.
Did you really? You never just guessed it.
Well, I heard methane somewhere, but... that seems like a really good initiative. So it's a feasibility study that's going to start.
It's done.
It's done.
We just finished it up.
Okay.
Just made a presentation to the council, the city council, and the mayor. They're very interested in me continuing to move ahead with this.
What would be the time frame on something like this? If it is in fact feasible, what would it?
It's the actual build a project. We would be building in 3 to 5 years.
Oh wow!
You have to get the money for it.
You have to get the money. Together and the permitting, there's some regulatory matters we have to deal with because we're dealing with the Rouge River too at that point.
So if we're going to be, we'll be generating electricity and then putting it back into the city,
the electrical grid. It most likely would not go back to the grid.
Oh,
because we'd construct this plant near where there's a high demand for electricity, mainly the F-150 plant and Severstal Steel.
Oh,
so we could avoid some of those distribution costs and make it more competitive for industry to buy this power.
But they would make it worthwhile to the city by buying it from us.
That's correct.
Okay. Huh. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd rather have it go back to the grid and help me, but it's still going to help the city.
Which
and,
in turn,
and the city needs all the profits it can get to continue other projects. So.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, my question, during the mayor's recent State of the City address, I remember a number. He said that there was a recent sustainability grant in the neighborhood of $900,000. And I think he said that. Did that go to the 300, or will it go to the 300 new streetlights?
Yes. We had $970,000.
$970,000.
Yes.
And that was the three. And was it,
and part of that is going for new street residential LED streetlights.
Very much more efficient, and that will save us money in the end as well.
30 to 50% more efficient.
Wow. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. What's right. the time frame on that? I think we actually had an email from a listener about this is the Streets Initiative, or what is it called?
Complete Streets.
Complete Streets, right.
Sure.
That's what
Streets,
this is.
It's part of Complete Streets.
Oh, it's part of it.
But the main thrust of Complete Streets is to design public rights of ways, not just for cars, to design it for bicycling, pedestrians, okay. mass transit.
Well, going to stop you right there just for a second. I'm a bicycle fanatic, and I'm part of the Bicycle League of American Bicycles and so on. I'm sure you've seen this, but we are not a bicycle-friendly city, according to the bicycle people. I know, Ford Land, how could we ever support bicycles? But it's a great transportation alternative. But guess what? We have some bike trails, and we've got some sidewalks that are not too bad for bikes, but we don't have a good way of bicycle transit. For example, I can't get here to Henry Ford Community College without risking life and limb because I can't get past Fairlane Town Center. There's no even sidewalks, much less good places to cross for bicyclists, much less pedestrians. So I'm going to give you my current copy, which has a full list of all bicycle-friendly communities. And I know you know about this stuff from before, but it's a token anyway.
Well,
so
thank you.
Something to read before you go to sleep at night. But so this would, because I read about some it's crazy. In Detroit, I was mentioning, I actually came back from Detroit on Michigan Avenue a couple months ago. And there were bike paths.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes.
There were bike paths. I mean, the city isn't in too great a shape, but somehow they got these bike lanes identified next to Michigan Avenue.
Everywhere.
But it's not in Dearborn. It's
east
further
of
east.
Yeah. It's east of Livernois. Yep. Mm-hmm. Past like southwest.
No, I didn't see anybody on their bikes there because I have to say, for somebody who's from the lily white suburbs, not racist, but still, we don't see the kind of decay in this area, thank goodness, that many of the neighborhoods in Detroit have. So it doesn't look particularly safe to ride there after dark. And I don't know what the crime numbers are, but I'm sure they're higher in Detroit. But still, they've got bike lanes on Michigan Avenue.
I took my wife to the U of D Mercy Dental School, which is not far from, right off of Michigan Avenue. And it was on a clear day last week. It was during the day, and there were so many people out on their bikes. And for me, as a driver, it was a little bit new. You know, I mean, we don't see that much, especially in Dearborn. And so, you know, you have to navigate a little more carefully. But it was really good to see the bikes.
Yeah, once people get familiar with bike paths and the rights of bicyclists. In fact, the Press and Guide has one of their special sections on the back page. They got a whole article about the rights of, I don't have it with me right now, but the rights of bicyclists. And somebody got that. I don't know who placed that in there. It wasn't identified, but it just needed filler. You know, why not put the stuff in about bike safety?
That's pretty good filler, yeah, especially this time of year with the weather.
So that's Complete Streets are maybe special designs for bike lanes.
Correct,
and
yes.
Then the better lighting.
Correct.
Which will make it safer, of course, and more energy efficient. Something yes. else about Complete Streets?
Pedestrian, making it easier for pedestrians to... And that goes to the health of the community, that we make it more walkable and more livable, so you don't have to always jump in your car and go somewhere. But you feel safe to walk to your wherever you have to take care of.
So it's in the planning stages now. It's an initiative. People are going to be looking at these issues. Nobody's identified anything. Is there a committee or a commission that's working on it?
Yes, there is a folks working on it. Part of the Complete Streets resolution that the city passed is it's directing the planning department to create a non-motorized transportation plan.
Oh, okay.
And so we've worked with a couple of residents on that plan who have interest certainly in biking. So that draft plan will go to the City Plan Commission sometime probably late summer after it gets pushed through all the different departments, and we have some public comment on it with some neighborhood associations and potential places that we want to do some implement projects.
Well, there's got to be something done around Fairlane Town Center. I mean, even Fairlane Town Center, those businesses can't be against having both pedestrian and bicycle access. I mean, that's got to be good for them, even though it's... But it's not that far from either East or West Dearborn to bike to Fairlane, but... You can't be out there with all the high-speed cars and without any separate paths or bike lanes or proper intersections. I mean, that's got to be an issue for the business people there.
Yes.
It can only help to get people from this area to get over there and to shop there and enjoy the area.
Yeah, Ford Land is they've done kind of a sea change in their whole philosophy how they want to develop their properties, mm-hmm. their portfolio.
Yeah.
They're making their properties LEED certified, mm-hmm. which is a green building
energy efficiency.
Efficiency. It also includes biking. So the folks that I work with at Ford Land have talked to me about how can they be more connected to the city in biking. It also connects to the two campuses here because there's going to be a pedestrian pathway through the around the Ring Road from the U of M Dearborn's North Campus to their main campus, and including Henry Ford Community College in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they used to have a sidewalk, but then we changed the roads, and then it became a pedestrian hazard, and then they tried to plant trees and stop it from happening, and people are still dashing across our south drive here to get over and back, and that's just terrible. I mean, some of them actually enrolled in both places. They shouldn't have to get in their car and drive around. It's merely 50 yards from one campus to the other, from the south to the north, and they shouldn't have to move their cars. And I understand why they got rid of the path, but I used to actually, from here at the college, exercise by walking from here down there around. And now of course, our campus is a lot nicer, so I just walk circles around here. But it's, it should be all walkable and bikeable, and it's especially for transportation. I know it's also healthy, but just thinking of it merely as recreation to ride around in circles in a park or something, no, the transportation issue, getting somewhere in place of using your car, that's so healthy, as well as, sure, you might need a car on bad weather days or something, but it's a wonderful initiative. So you think that's getting off to a head start. There's no city money behind it. Again, it's looking for grants and
for the
lights are already going to happen.
Mm-hmm. There is money available through different foundations to support complete streets.
Mm-hmm. Well, the city of Detroit got a grant somehow for Michigan Avenue bike lanes. I don't know how that happened.
Well, I can tell you how that happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Michigan Department of Transportation is required to spend approximately 5% of their funds on non-motorized transportation.
Huh.
So that's why you see the bike path. Because they adapted complete streets at a state level.
Uh-huh.
So you see, the
uh-huh.
ultimate goal is take that bike path down Michigan Avenue all the way to 275.
Okay. That was my next question. And they picked that area first because there's less traffic? Or why?
Yes. Bottom line is that the average daily traffic count on Michigan Avenue has dropped down. So they can
especially that's east of Illinois, sure.
Yeah, they can put it in safely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was. And you're exactly right. And it's cool.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Well, we only have a couple minutes. What are you going to be speaking on at the Energy Conference here on campus next Friday? Again, the HFCC Alternative Energy Summit next Friday, March 30th, definitely. And you're going to be doing a presentation or two. What are your topics?
I'm going to be talking about Adopt-A-Watt. That's an effort mm-hmm. that the city partnered with a nonprofit from Royal Oak. And their program is they help install energy-efficient lighting or energy-efficient technologies with no cost to a city.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did, we partnered with them, and they solicited, like Adopt-A-Watt, where folks would sponsor lights.
Mm-hmm.
And that project has been completed in our parking garages in West Downtown.
Just an aside, just the irony of it, my daughter, who is a teacher in Southfield Public Schools, she heard about the Adopt-A-Watt program on this show and about the special initiative in West Dearborn that. So she took down the name of the guy and called them. Their office is in Royal Oak or somewhere,
correct,
right?
Correct, yes.
And they came out to her school, middle school in Southfield, and they put a project together, and they got all the money ready, and they're going to do more energy efficiency just at her school. And it's been sitting at the Southfield Board of Ed for 5 months now. All they have to say is yes to make it happen. And
that's
they haven't. I know they get distracted in these difficult times, but it's unbelievable.
It's been a great relationship for the city.
She has a proposal to redo the roof for a garden, and that grant is pending also. And they have an organic garden, actually, that the kids and two other teachers and her maintain also at the school. So all these initiatives, and it wasn't just my daughter, she had some help there, but the Adopt-A-Wad people, good people. And you know, whatever the needs are, I know they've helped a lot of companies and school districts outside of Michigan. So
New
they're
Jersey,
a national organization.
Department of Transportation, Philadelphia Airport. Yeah.
I mentioned to our listeners that the alternative energy thing is not just for big industrial customers or consumers, but there's a few other proposals, presentations that actually would benefit individuals in their
That's
own
correct.
Homes, too. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the presentations I'm talking about is our greenhouse gas emissions inventory for the city, and why are we doing that? So we can. What it's going to allow us to do is get a handle on how much energy we use in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can work with residents about how to lower their energy costs based upon the study that we do.
I have to ask you, are you still working on that off-the-grid home in with your brother in Wisconsin, I think it was?
Oh, yes. I am working on it's a log home, log cabin.
It's in Wisconsin, is
in
that
Wisconsin,
right?
In Wisconsin, central Wisconsin.
Right.
And we are going to be off the grid. The idea is to use... whatever, we're use solar and wind and geothermal.
Okay.
To heat the facility.
That's so cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much more time? I know you're doing this really part time, aren't you?
Yeah, it's because my brothers and I we work full time.
Oh, he's in Iowa, and you're
no, he's here.
Oh, okay.
My two brothers are here. It takes time. We got the logs cut. We got five rows of logs up. We got a line on some solar panels.
Wow. And with middle of Wisconsin. That's the only place that has snow. I'm kidding.
Yeah. And they didn't have very much snow either this year.
Okay, in the press and guide on page 12 of their What's Next thing is a big story, too, from Jim Kasuba. Do I know him? From Heritage Media somewhere, not necessarily in Michigan, but no, it's actually based in Wyandotte, the story about a gentleman, a company there, about how solar is becoming more and more affordable. For the average home, and there's still energy credits and so on people can get,
still get
from
some
DTE or somewhere else.
There's a
the
market
taxes.
For the renewable energy credits.
Mm-hmm,
The solar currents program that DTE is discontinued at this point.
Ah.
Though there's talk about it coming back in 2013.
Mm.
It was discontinued. Just
they had they'd reached their right. their goals. They had to have 10% of the power that they produce come from renewable sources.
Oh, okay. All right.
So
yeah. He talks about putting in a typical system at $17,000, and Wyandotte residents get a check for $3,000 after the system is installed. The DTE thing, they were giving $7,200 back for the same sort of system, which then cost about $21,000. So it's already $4,000 cheaper. But that DTE money is not happening, I guess.
Not at this point, though.
Not at this point, yeah.
It's being discussed at the Michigan Public Service Commission to bring that program back, and maybe in a different format, because the solar currents was one of the most favorable to consumers in the country.
Oh, I would imagine.
It was a great program.
Well, we have to wrap up now here for the Journal, because coming up next here on WHFR Dearborn is Highway 61, the Best in Blues with Joanne Korchinska. And just want to say, again, thanks very much for coming by today, Dave, and sorry about any confusion about date and time. Definitely next Friday is very important, though, for the Energy Summit, and hope everybody can get there that has the morning free. There is no cost for it. It's at the Mazzara Building, just south of HFCC Student Center here on the main campus in